Blog Talk Radio.
Snyder, and we are broadcasting live from the beautiful Dillon State Park here in East Central Ohio. And tonight's guest is Miriam Delicato, and she has written a wonderful book called Blue Star Fulfilling Prophecy. So how does a woman from a small town in British Columbia, Canada, become involved in one of the most talked about prophecies on the planet today, the Hopi Blue Star Prophecy? Learn how her life was completely changed after an encounter on a lonely highway with tall blonde aliens in 1988. Miriam embarks on a journey into a world of secret governments, clones, Russian psychic army recruiters, the ancient Hopi people, and alien encounters. And we have Miriam Delicato on the show tonight, and it's my pleasure to welcome her. Hi, Miriam. How are you today?
I'm doing really well, Mark, and I'm excited to be here and talk to Ohio and have this opportunity to share with all of you this story. Thank you.
Are you still living in Canada?
You know, I am still living in Canada at the moment. I'm in northern British Columbia, and I've been there for the last probably about 5 years. I do travel into the States a lot, and I've been traveling quite a bit in the last 2 years. But I am still living in Canada, and I don't think that's going to change in the next, few months or anything like that.
So are you traveling right now? Are you in the U.S. or are you in Canada right now?
Right now I'm in Arizona, and I'm up here on the Hopi lands, actually, visiting some friends and taking in the beautiful desert that they have out here in Arizona.
Now, in your book, you say that at times when you were laying in your crib, you remembered your parents talking and you actually understood what they were saying. Have you ever been able to understand how it was that you were able to comprehend your parents' speech at such a young age?
You know, that is not something that I may describe or understand. What I can tell you, which is interesting, is I don't know, I was JD. My parents had a conversation and of course, that was curious. I remember the station and gave them the details of it, and they both were very surprised, and they said, how on earth do you know that, because you were just a baby? I said, well, I kind of remember sitting in my crib and talking about it, and they were really taken aback by it. But I can't really explain it. What I can say is that by sharing that story with quite a few people, that... what I can tell you is that after, 2.5 years and talking about that, I have come across a couple of other people who also have had that experience, but none of us can explain why or how it happened. What I do know is that language itself does in part have to do with the brain in being able to comprehend pictures and images, which is part of the way that we communicate. And so maybe on a subconscious level, there's also a level of telepathy that we're experiencing. And through that telepathy, we sort of lose that full connection to that telepathy and move into physical words. So that could be an explanation for it.
Miriam, you sound really good right now. Make sure you continue to speak up because you kind of faded out just a little bit there for a second. And that's what I was going to ask you about. I was going to ask you about your telepathic abilities. Do you believe that at this time in your life you still have those telepathic abilities?
Oh, there's absolutely no question that I still do. There's no question of that whatsoever. It's just the level of telepathy that I have. I wouldn't be there to myself as a baby. But, you know, it kind of rolls into the whole experience and life being a little bit unique in that area. For example, when I was very, very young, playing a game of looking at people and trying to figure out what they were thinking about. Of course, that's telepathy that we're talking about. And if I didn't like what they were thinking or thought that it was no good, I would sometimes get scared. But now I don't really look at people and say, what are they thinking? But what I can say is that the people that are close to me in my life, if, for example, they start to think about me and they think, man, you know, they haven't talked to me for a week or 2 weeks, and they're thinking, okay, I'm going to call Miriam today. That's what I'm going to do. They'll usually end up getting a call from me. Or right at the moment when they think, okay, I need to pick up the phone and call Miriam, I will end up phoning them and they'll say, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And a cute little story that actually tells you how connected I can be at this point is talking about a friend of mine, Jane. There's a restaurant in Vancouver that I absolutely love. And I go there, went there all the time when I lived there. And me and my friends would often go to this particular restaurant and basically feast on the wonderful Singaporean food that they had. And so living in northern BC, one day I was feeling very, disjointed from my old friend. I called Jane and I left this message on her phone and I said, you know, Jane, I really miss you. I could, are they right now? I just want to all of us to go to this front and sit, and I miss laughing, joking, and all that I usually eat because I eat a lot, and I just wanted to tell you how much I love you and miss you and wish I was there with you right now. So, and I named the people that I hoped was at all when we came back into town. About half an hour later, she called me and said, oh, my gosh, Miriam, you know, she said, you won't believe what happened. She walked out of the restaurant, listened to the messages on her phone, and she and all of those people were actually sitting in that restaurant at that moment. So there can be that level of telepathy. It's just not a constant flow of telepathy from one to the next to the other person and then back to me again. But I do have a system set up with my sister, which I won't get into. If any disaster ever strikes, she knows exactly what she needs to do and I need to do in connection with each other. We've got a plan, actually, through telepathy. And we've utilized it a few times.
Miriam, are you calling in on Skype or on a cell phone?
I'm calling in on Skype. Am I going in and out?
Yeah, and usually Skype is really, really clear. I'm surprised about that. I don't know if you wanted to call back real quick or if that would even make a difference.
I'm not sure if it would make a difference or not. Just let me try and move the computer and see if that works in order to make this make it come up a little bit clearer.
That sounds a little better, I think.
And see, the problem is that, okay, I need to not disconnect here.
Are you on a laptop?
Here. Yes.
Okay, you're on a laptop.
Okay, is that that?
That sounds
that
better.
Better,
yeah. That sounds a lot better. Thanks. In your book, you stated that at a very young age, your father told you that in the event of a nuclear war, that you should go to the mountains because the nuclear clouds would have to drop most of their rain before they got up to the height of the mountains. And I wondered, as you have gotten older now, have the memories of your father's statements affected your worldview at all?
You know, they have completely affected my worldview, and they constantly bring me back into, you know, let me compose myself in that question mark, because actually it brings it into a number of different. I had my contact in 88. One of the things that I found myself doing was connecting back in with the knowledge that I had as a child, and part of that knowledge was definitely the connection with my father and a lot of the things that he had taught us and said. So it did have a very strong effect on myself, and it still does today, because when I question things and in my path, even in this moment, one of the things that I do is I question, you know, I sit down and I question my own self in my memories of what my father said, what I remember, and what the ETs told me. So it's always present in shaping many of the things that I need to sort of work through, if that makes any sense at all.
Do you see a strong possibility of a nuclear war in our future?
You know, 23 years ago when this incident, when I had this encounter, I actually did, and it was very disturbing for me to think about. Today, right now, I would say that that feeling and that vision has sort of dissipated somewhat. There's been a couple of points actually last year when I really, for some reason, got very, very, very nervous, and I started to have flashes of a nuclear blast. And I can't remember when that was. I think that was just in late spring, early summer that I started to feel that way. And then all of a sudden it just sort of stopped. And I thought, wow, something must have happened. Maybe something happened politically for it to sort of remove itself from my mind. But I have on and off over the last 23 years had that vision. And that actually goes, Mark. It's not a constant. And because my father talked about it, I often think about that and wonder where all of these areas are where nuclear fallout would not happen. Apparently, because of course his conversation with me as a child was often talking about that nuclear fallout as well. But my father's views on many things remained more constant than they have with me, but I think that's also because I kind of opened myself up to more of the information coming continually rather than, you know, one lump of information and only running with that. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, that does make sense, Miriam. Let me give a quick shout-out to the chat room. We've got a packed chat room tonight. I just want to say hi to After Dark Radio, Code Dimensions, Doggy Dog 1998, Grand Elf. We've got six or seven guests in there tonight with the guest numbers, Janet H., Jeff 72, Otter Clan 1714, Rainbow Badger Woman, RD47, and UFO Abductee. I appreciate all you guys showing up to the show tonight. And Miriam is a fascinating person, and I'm sure you'll enjoy this. I personally, Miriam, think that we're headed for a very positive future. I don't have the same concerns that I felt maybe two or three years ago. I'm not sure why that is. I couldn't put it on any one thing. I want to switch gears a little bit and go back to your younger days. And you told a story in your book about a ball that bounce from the floor to the ceiling over and over again. And you stated that there was an entity in your basement, and it was continually making noises which would keep your family awake. And I wondered, was that entity responsible for the bouncing of that ball?
Was it responsible for, that cut out on me.
Okay. You know, in your book, you talk about the ball bouncing from the ceiling to the floor to the ceiling to the floor. And I wondered, was there a demonic entity in your basement?
Well, it certainly wasn't positive, Mark.
I like that.
I've got a laugh.
Okay. I got the picture.
It was not. No, it was not positive because it didn't give everyone warm and fuzzies, as they say, and it was not. It was very frightening for us as children, and even for everyone else that would come there. It was really frightening for them also. A lot of people saw things, had different experiences. My particular experience, again, was, you know, probably around 10 years old, and I was 10 at the time. And you know, this noise, this entity, this being, this energy, whatever it was, we weren't even sure, that was down in the basement, would keep the family awake and everything. I don't remember that my father was usually around when it happened, and that's probably because he has abilities also. And for me, I didn't necessarily have those experiences. I felt it when I went down there, but I didn't have any of the physical experiences that other people did, just hearing the sounds, things getting dragged across the floor, stomping on the stairs, that kind of thing. So I would go to sleep at night, and I would literally close my eyes, and I'd say a prayer to God to protect my family, me and my family, from whoever lived in the basement and so forth. And then, you know, I'd speak directly to whatever it was and tell them that they'd have to go through me. And so waking up after hours and hours of sleep, I'd be completely and utterly exhausted because I'd have been standing in the basement in my dreams all night with a fiery entity across the room. Interestingly enough, Mark, after this experience that I had in 88, I think it was probably within the first year, if I recall correctly, I actually went back and with the abilities, the, you know, quote, psychic abilities that I had at that heightened point after my contact, I went in my mind back to the house and my mother's home, and I basically removed that entity, and it all of a sudden disappeared, and my family started to tell me that. I did not inform them that I did that because I knew that I couldn't inject ego or, you know, into that because for some reason it would make it come back. I don't know what that meant. I just knew that I couldn't tell them. And then it was probably about, you know, 7 to 10 years later that I actually told them that that's what happened. Because they couldn't figure it out why it all of a sudden just disappeared.
Do you think people that have these psychic abilities have these kind of experiences more often than other people?
I believe absolutely that people that are connected on a, quote, intuitive level of any kind are more hyper-aware of different energies that are around them. There's a delicate balancing act, though, between the imagination and what is reality. And there, in turn, lies a bit of an issue in this area because I have met several people who believe that they're having all of these experiences, and I listen to them, and there's something not quite connected about what it is that they're sharing. And then many other people who are very, very, you know, quiet about their experiences and what they're seeing and hearing and sensing, they don't even know what's going on. You know, they can't even define it with words by saying psychic or telepathy or anything like that. and yet there's having these extraordinary experiences. So I believe that it, in part, has something to do with the individual, and that every man, woman, and child on Earth has the ability to tap into these energies. It's a matter of how they go about doing it. Sometimes they're aware, and sometimes they're not. And also, it's a matter of recognition, Mark, because, you know, someone can have telepathy with another person, and they're going to write it off and say it was just a coincidence. So it's also in the recognition clearly of what it is that's happened. And that is, again, a very delicate balancing game, because sometimes it is just, it just happens to happen that way. The interesting thing, if you kind of wrap this all together with the ET experience, the quote, psychic abilities, intuitions that people have, visions into the future of possible destruction that may be coming, all of these things are actually interrelated with one another, and it's part of the reason why we've seen massive movements happening on the Earth to try and create positive change, because 23 years ago, the visions that were given to me were very, very dire. It made exceptionally clear that it was exceptionally clear we had a choice for where we were moving. And as we started to become more aware of ourselves through that intuition, there has been positive change. And I think that that may be, Mark, why for yourself, I mean, I'm not speaking for you, but I'm making sort of a view that this is why many people are feeling more positive, because they actually have this energy is working on a subliminal level.
Boy, that's a fascinating statement. I'm reading a book called We the Arcturians, and it's written by Dr. Milanovic, Dr. Norma J. Milanovic, and she's a professor, had no interest in the paranormal whatsoever, and she started getting these messages. And the beings say they are from Arcturus. And it's one of the most enlightening books that I've ever read. For me, the main message of the book is that we are all one. And you recently, or I don't know, it might have been a couple years ago, actually, I saw you on a YouTube video, and you went on for about 10 minutes just explaining the concept of oneness. And I wondered if you could elaborate on that again this evening.
Well, that is, the concept of oneness. The concept of oneness. What does that mean to an individual human being? Lies within the perceptions and understanding that they have of themselves in the cosmos. And it lies within the understanding and concepts that they're able to comprehend. But when you take away all of the different views of what this means, there are life forms. If you believe in God, or you believe whatever it is that your religion, your faith, your belief is, we are all searching or praying or meditating to the same source. And if you believe between yourself as an individual and that source of God, there are many different types of existences. For example, even in the Bible, we go, you know, people believe that they go to what's called heaven. You know, there's all of these different concepts of what happens to us when we die, for example. So there are, quote, other worlds out there. For myself, I believe in extraterrestrial life, and that extraterrestrial life actually has the ability to come into our world in different forms. What it means is that no matter where we are in the cosmos, no matter where we are physically, emotionally, spiritually, we're all connecting into the same energy, the same focus, the same self. And, for example, all of these different extraterrestrials You know, a lot of people talk about it's the Arcturians, the Syrians, the Blues, the Greys, the, you know, you name it. There's many, many different ones. The Pleiadians. All of these extraterrestrials are still in that fabric of life, and so we are all still interconnected. And as these ETs had said to me when I was on board the craft in 88, I asked them about God. I said, are you God? I asked them that. And they said, no, we are not. And I said, and I think that I was kind of trying to ask them, do you believe in God? Who are you from? Where are you from? And they said, we seek to know God the same way you seek to know God. The difference between us and the ETs is that they have a broader vision of the truer concept of oneness and interconnection than human beings. But we are all still walking that same path towards enlightenment of some form. So we really are interconnected. And also, you know, when we go to sleep at night and we have visions and dreams, and people say, well, that's your dream state. I mean, I've said since I was a child that that dream state was an interconnected another one of me. I was living two lives always simultaneously, and that whatever I did in this world would affect the other world and vice versa. And everyone knows that when you're going through a stressful time, you can potentially have nightmares. So there is a very beautiful interconnectedness that all life has, whether we understand it or not. And to understand and have respect for that interconnectedness is actually having the respect for ourselves and for God, the source of everything, however it is that you believe that to be.
Your most dramatic extraterrestrial contact came one night when you and some friends were driving on a road in Canada, and a very bright disc-shaped craft stopped on the road, and you eventually went on board the ship, and you met these tall, blonde ETs, and I wondered if you could tell us about that experience.
Well, that particular experience, of course, was life-altering in many different ways, because up to that point, I had not remembered ET contact. There were other adults in the car. There were three other adults and a child. I think, you know, for the first time, Mark, I'll share with your listeners something about that particular night that I haven't shared before, because this is actually recent. The three adults that were in the car with me, they, you know, there were some strange lights that were following us for hours and hours. They looked like very large heads that were following us. Then we, you know, we could get into this and take the whole hour, so I'm going to encapsulate, you know, really synthesize what it is that happened in that night so I can give more information, if that's all right, Mark.
Sure, go ahead.
So, you know, these lights followed us for a number of hours, and then eventually we went through a town, got to the other side of this town, small town in Canada, and when there was no one around, you know, basically the craft came, and we ended up pulling the car over to the side of the road. The driver was almost in a hypnotic state, it looked like, pulled the car over. I appeared to be the only one that was awake at that time, got out of the car, followed these short little beings down the road to a large craft where I saw two tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed extraterrestrials standing there in the doorway, and I walked on board that craft with them. Now, when I came back, certain things took place when I came back into the car, and I'll get back to what happened on the craft, but in today's moment, in this moment right now, what's interesting for me personally, is that the man that was originally he had said to me about 7 years after the fact that he kind of felt like something must have happened that night. They didn't remember. None of them really had clear memories of seeing a UFO or anything like that. They all remember these bits and pieces of strange lights following us and this and that. The man said to me, Miriam, he said, I don't know what happened that night, but he said, for some reason, my mind always goes back to that particular night. He said, for some reason, it's like something happened and I just can't remember it. So that was interesting. That was about 7 years later. His girlfriend at the time, I haven't spoken to in years and years and years. There's a possibility that I'm hopeful that I'll be able to talk to her again fairly soon, because I heard that she was trying to make contact with me. But the other person that was driving when we pulled over to the side of the road, I had given her, she's known about the book for quite a while. I gave her a copy. She hadn't read it for, you know, I don't know how long. And about a month and a half, not even a month and a half ago, I sat in her house and I read her that section of the book where we were pulled over. And just before this, I was talking to her. I said, what is it that you remember? Interestingly, many of the things that I shared with her in the details, I'm like, yeah, I do remember it being really cold when we got, for some reason, she said, and it was really cold, and that doesn't make sense. And these little memories about the lights following us and the radio station, she has these sparking partial memory of it, but she can't get any further than that. And so it's interesting, because my memory was so clear after that incident. But we also know about, you know, these ETs giving people what we call screen memory, something that is similar but completely and totally different, in order to be able to comprehend what it is that happened. Because it's not just about trying to take away memories, Mark. It's about the brain not going into a post-traumatic or a traumatic situation because you've experienced something so completely and utterly different out of the normal paradigm of this particular life. It gives the mind something else to think of instead of trying to rationalize something that in fact can almost not be rationalized. And so, you know, that whole experience and what these ETs gave to me as far as knowledge on that craft that day, you know, really revolved around the interconnectedness, the oneness, the psychic abilities, the intuitions, the seeing into the future, the possible futures, not only the dire futures, but knowing that, you know, humanity did have a choice as far as what path they were going to take. And so when people ask me and try to get so much details about the EETs and where they're from and what their world is like, I mean, to me, it's ridiculous. You know, I mean, to a point, it's ridiculous, because to me, it has no meaning. We're here on Earth, and we need to focus on Earth. There is looking into who they are, where they're from, and what they're doing. We absolutely should be doing that. We shouldn't just blindly look at them and say, okay, well, they're so much more than we are. But to focus on it to the extent that some people do is not the point of their contact. And it's kind of bringing it into all of those worlds that we have and the interconnectedness, and understanding that, you know, if we did have nuclear war, maybe we would affect their world. So that's a really big question. And on that question, I could talk for another hour and a half.
Well, I remember from your book that the girl that you're talking about that doesn't have the clear memories, you said that she kind of went into a state where her face went blank and she was almost like a zombie, and then she pulled the car over and it was almost like she went to sleep, or that the extraterrestrials were kind of blocking her mind or her memory so that she wouldn't experience that trauma. But when you were on the craft, can you tell us a little bit more about what happened on the craft and what they told you?
Well, you know, being on the craft was really interesting because to me it was as if the ship was alive. It shimmered and it was very bright, and the inside of the craft itself, in the center of it, the energy core of it was almost like, I don't know. I mean, literally, I mean, I know it sounds crazy and people will probably tear this apart and that's fine. But, you know, when you watch Star Trek and you see the plasma or whatever it is in the center of the, you know, in the of the core, as they call it, the core is going to blow. Well, that is kind of what this was like, but it wasn't encapsulated like that. It was just free-flowing, whitish golden energy that looked like it was just moving and flowing like water almost. It's in that way, but it looked nothing like water. So that's what the inside looked like. It was very sterile. They brought me in, and there was more than one area of the craft that I was on, actually. But the one area was this room, and the only thing I remember is sitting in what I call a light chair, a chair that looked like it was made of light, and almost like a holographic screen that popped up in front of me. And at that point, they showed me possible futures of the Earth and possible devastation that would be coming. And they also showed potential positive outcomes for our planet and the people. And there was a lot of information that they gave me about this interconnectedness and oneness, Mark, and how anything that we do as human beings has an effect in all of the worlds. Even if someone doesn't believe that they have great, quote, power, unquote, meaning they're not a public speaker, they're not famous, they don't have any big networks, they actually could potentially, through their own personal actions, create a cascade effect that could change the paradigm of Earth. And so this was the primary piece of information that they gave about how we as human beings, if we could understand the oneness and the connectedness, but also to understand that we, if we came together, for example, in unity and peacefulness, that, you know, we would further ourselves, we would have a beautiful world to live in that would be peaceful, and moving closer into that interconnectedness through the ability to astral, you know, do astral projection, to be able to go into our dreams and have greater understanding on that level, to understand that we would be able to travel to some of these other worlds eventually by being able to project ourselves there with part of our form, part of ourselves, part of our, you know, essence of life. It really took me very, very far in this information and knowledge. And I haven't talked about a lot of this for the first part of coming out because the conceptual understanding of humanity and as a whole has been moving towards more and more understanding. Meaning I've had this knowledge for 23 years, but 23 years ago, if I said the word, quote, alien, everybody freaked out. I mean, it was crazy. So we've come a long way in being able to share very openly these massive grand concepts of oneness, interconnectedness, and responsibility, coupled with the spiritual aspect of it, of the concept of having greater understanding of self to be able to facilitate change on not even a personal level, but on a universal level, and how that universe looks. Because if we can create peace between ourselves, then we can carry it out into the universe and then create that, and then we create the peace of God. And that goes back into the question that you asked me prior about the oneness. So, you know, they did say, they gave me information regarding a time when humanity would have to come together in order to create a shift. The wording, I guess, out there right now that people are using, which I think describes it well, is a paradigm. The truth is you should be able to create a utopian-type state. But don't kid yourselves. It's not going to happen in a day or 10 years. It's going to happen over a period of time. And the people that say that we're going to blink our eyes and everything's going to change, I think the only way you're going to blink your eyes and everything changes is if you die. So there's, you know, I'm not going down that path with people because they'll argue it until the end of time. Even ancient cultures. One of the interesting things that they talked to me about were these ancient cultures and how particular groups of people on the planet did have a very specific role in our future and in our past of what it is that they were doing and why they were here. And again, because we only have 20 minutes, I'm trying to encapsulate a lot of conceptual understanding that they gave to me regarding how the, quote, indigenous cultures of the world have had this interconnected knowledge, for example, and always have, because when this particular world started, meaning the fourth world, which is what they told me we were currently living in, that the world itself was interconnectedness, we had this ability to really move spiritually throughout the universe. I don't know how else to describe it. But in our reality, in our paradigm, in our world right now, these particular ancient tribes were meant to be our teachers and our leaders, and that this was one of the tasks, was to enable them to come forward with a voice now to be able to give us the balance that we need in order to walk forward into the world. And I don't know if what I just shared makes sense, Mark.
I think it makes perfect sense. And you're talking a lot about some of the concepts that I'm learning in this other book that seem to coincide perfectly with some of the things that I've heard you say before. And don't worry about time because, you know, I would love to have you back on the show whenever your schedule permits. And I know that there's no way in 1 hour that I can even touch on half of what my guests know. So we'll just go with the flow tonight and see where things end, and that's where we'll stop. But I wanted to ask you one question that ever since I read your book that I've been wanting to ask you. And there is a fellow named Charles Hall who was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada between 65 and 67. He was a weather observer for the United States Air Force. And he said that every 2 weeks, a large black titanium mothership would fly over the Area 1 facility and land near Dogbone Lake out in the desert, and then eventually it would move off into the side of a mountain nearby. And Charles has written 4 books about his experience with a group of extraterrestrials he calls the Tall Whites. He got to know this group of extraterrestrials, and they were actually working with the U.S. government. And he describes these beings as tall, with very large blue eyes, very white skin, and their hair was a very light blonde color. And the amazing thing is that that matches your contacts very much. And I wondered if you had ever heard about Charles Hall before.
I did actually hear about Charles Hall. I think anyone that knows me also knows that I don't read other people's materials. And the reason that I do that is because I try not to allow my own mind to be influenced, because even now, and actually I'll kind of throw this in if I may, that when I had my contact in 1988, they said remember everything, but they also told me, and I've heard other contactees saying this also, that information would come to me at the time that I would need it. So it would be stored, it would be processed into my mind, stored at the back of my mind, and then when I needed it, it would step forward. It would sort of come back into the conscious thought of the moment, if you understand. So that's one of the reasons why I don't read people's books, so that I can keep that clarity. Now, as far as Charles Hall is concerned, I've heard about the tall whites. Now, I don't know what it is that they say about who they are. What I can tell you is, from my contacts, they sound very, 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 very much the same. However, I also know this. My contacts were very clear that that there were different groups, okay, there were different groups that just because one tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed ET was good did not mean that all of them were, and that there were splinter groups. Do you understand? So there could potentially, so I think that, you know, when in this particular area, one of the concerns that I've always had from the very beginning is the same thing that we do in the world today, which is actually keeping us separated, and that is by creating boxes that we put ourselves in. So if you're, for example, if you're a Muslim, some people believe that, you know, you're bad because certain Muslims are bad. Well, you know, there's Christians out there who have been who are bad, and that doesn't mean that all Christians are bad. So the idea of saying that an extraterrestrial blonde-haired and blue-eyed is really good does not mean, you know, I do not agree with that at all. If someone says that a gray is bad, I don't agree with that at all. I think that we need to use caution, because there's always people out there that are going to come across the same type of being and have a different understanding of the experience, and to have different information and that comes forward as a result of that. As far as Charles Hall, what is interesting about that, about his contacts that I've heard, is that they actually lived very close to that. They have an underground base, I believe. Is that right, Mark? They had a
base right. They were actually on the S-4 facility there near Area 51, actually in Area 51. And Charles often saw the tall whites interacting with human high-ranking officers like colonels and generals. And at times, these tall whites would actually come literally into the barracks there with Charles at night and, you know, pretty much scare him to death. But over time and over the 2 years there, he actually got to know some of these individuals, and he conquered his fear. And there was one lady there, one of these tall whites, called the Teacher. That was her CIA name. They called her the Teacher. And she told Charles that she had been on the earth at least as far back as the time that James Madison was president of the United States. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
I do believe that their lifespan is much more, you know, much lengthier than that of a human being, yes. Because in order for them to be able to have, I don't know, I mean, I guess that's just a purely full 100% human view that I'm about to say, but it just seems as though they've had a lot of experience, you know? I mean, knowledge is one thing, but as we all know, knowledge needs to be processed. And so it just really seems that they've been around for a very long time, physically, each one of them. And so, you know, the idea that they're there is interesting. Area 51, I was there once in that area, to the little ALE Inn that's out in Rachel, Nevada.
Right.
I don't know if anyone knows about that. It's a great little place. Yeah, if you're ever in that area, check it out. It's only a few hours away from Las Vegas. But my impression was, even prior to speaking to Charles Hall, because I did speak to him briefly for about 5 minutes once, and hearing about his story, that I did, in fact, feel that there was an underground base in that particular area, in the area, in the same general facility area that he was talking about. Now, in my book, okay, in my book, I also talk about how I was in Second Mesa, Arizona, and a blonde-haired, blue-eyed male came up onto the mesa and had an encounter with me where he had telepathy. But he was very much looking like he had on jeans and a blue T-shirt, you know? Clearly not human. Clearly not human. And what's interesting is, you know, ringing it back together again, when I told that experience, he laughed. And he used to go to Las Vegas from time to time. He told me when I was talking to him about that, he said, you be careful in that area. He said, you don't even know it. He said, those beings, he said, sometimes you'll even see them in Las Vegas. He said, sometimes you'll even see them, but they hide really well, is what he said. So I understand what he meant by that. Because these tall blonde-haired blue-eyed beings that I, you know, the one that I saw on the mesa here in Second Mesa, Arizona, he, you know, I recognized that he looked completely and utterly, quote, weird. He looked like a, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, you know, when you talk, when you see on television, have you ever actually seen anyone like who is, albino?
Yes.
But, you know, it's like being an albino. It's like being, you know, like the twist of hood type of thing where they're, you know, they're so white. These beings, are, their skin is so pink that it's almost opaque. It's almost clearly see-through.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what kind of skin he had, and blue eyes that were as blue as the bluest sky, weird hair, etc. So he stuck out, but nobody paid attention. So when my father said this, you can construe that as saying, oh, yeah, this guy's a little whacked. He's, you know, he's thinking things off the side here, you know, he's not really thinking clearly. But when, for me, I have these kinds of experiences, I often revert back to what my father said and say, you know what, he's not crazy because I saw that. I know what I saw. I know what I experienced, that sort of thing. So Charles Hall and his experiences, I believe, because of the little bit of information I have, but I also know from my personal encounters with these beings, they're very intimidating. They can be because they're very strong spiritually and energetically is what it is. Also, your body has to be able to, your brain function because of the firing of the synapses and the actual, our bodies are made up of an electrical charge. We have electricity running through our bodies, our low, low, low levels. So when you come into the contact with a being where the electricity is like, really vamped up, it changes the electrical flow and energy of your own body, and that makes it intimidating just because of that. So a lot of interconnected pieces, and then with the indigenous cultures going back, tying in the history of the world and the history of humanity. And if some people some people argue that all these things are made by governments from around the world, you know what I have to say to that? What kind of medication are you on? Because if you can tell, I mean, it's the most ridiculous, irrational thing I think a person could possibly say. Because these things have been happening for hundreds and years, and there's depictions of that all over the earth in artwork, in petroglyphs, in ancient stories. And so in order to have a better understanding of this, you just have to look into the past. And I think sometimes in today's world, we get too caught up in the what happened today and trying to rationalize it and pull it apart. You know, we've only got a couple left, so why that?
I had a question from the chat room I wanted to make sure we got to. Rainbow Badger Woman asks, how is your sister doing, Miriam?
Oh, Rainbow, thank you so much for asking. You know, I recently had an experience where my sister and her daughter were traveling in Europe, and she called me completely and utterly dying. And the second that the phone got handed to me, I felt some really dark energy around her. She went to the hospital in Germany. I was terrified for her safety. I mean, I was. I was just like, I can't lose my sister. And I asked everyone around the world to pray for her. And literally within an hour of all of those prayers going out, there was a massive change in my sister. And that continued. A healer from Germany ended up going to her bedside and did Reiki on her, where both my sister and him, in their mind's eye, saw dark energy leave her body. It took a few more days, but with all of that prayer that came out, she did end up coming home safely. She recovered completely. The doctors did not know at all what was wrong with her. They never figured it out. They never had a diagnosis fully. It came on very suddenly and severely, and I just, you know, want to thank everyone for everything, the prayers, meditations, positive thinking, goodwill, everything that's sent out. But she's absolutely fine. Very, very strange situation. And thank you so much for asking.
Well, Miriam, I can't believe it, and it makes me sad to say there's only 3 minutes left in the show. So if you wanted to tell people about your book or your website or any speaking engagements that you have, please do so.
Well, I have a website, and if you're interested in purchasing my book, I have it in PDF as well as in paperback. That's Blue Project that I've been working so hard on for almost a year, and that is thegreatgathering.org. There's been so many delays in the website, but I also believe in divine timing on that, and I hope that everyone will just from every week go and check out that site, thegreatgathering.org, because this particular project was brought on by all of the understanding that I've been talking about today, and it does focus around one thing, and that is the oneness and the ability for human beings to come together in order to create change, and that is the entire purpose, or was the entire purpose, of my contacts, and still is today. So I'm very grateful for this time with you, Mark, and with your listeners out there. And I would love to come back on the show, and I'm sure that we can schedule it. I am very busy. I don't have any speaking engagements, but I've been working hard on some big projects, such as the Great Gathering, and look forward to being able to spend more time with the people once those projects are completed.
Well, thanks, Miriam. I'll definitely be back in touch with you real soon, and we'll schedule another time on the show. And I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real pleasure. And I'll close the show out with some music now. And if you want to hang on the line just for a second, that'd be great, Miriam.
Okay.
Miriam?
Yes.
I just wanted to thank you for coming on. We're not streaming anymore right now, but we are still going to the MP3. And I'll definitely send you an email, and we'll try to schedule you back on. It's just been my absolute pleasure having you on, and I appreciate you calling in, and it's just been really great.
Mark, it was wonderful. I'm very grateful. Have me on the show some other time. I'd love to have that. And I hope that, I was supposed to have a landline tonight, and then at the very last minute, everything got changed. And I thought, man, because even where I'm at, because I'm out in Hopi right now,
right.
The connections are no good. The phones, the cell phones are no good. The phone lines can even have problems. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? Because I'm actually, I'm staying in this place, but the place that I'm at had a meeting in it tonight. So I'm like, oh, my goodness. So I had to leave. So anyway, this is like a last-minute thing. So I hope that it came out okay. So let me know.
I think it did. You kind of came in and out a little bit every once in a while. We got some echoes. But I think it's still came out okay. You know, Skype is funny because I had Mary Rodwell on last week from Australia, and she was crystal clear. So
mm-hmm.
I thought Skype would have been the answer. So maybe it does have to do with the lines. It's not just the distance anyway.
No, it has to do with the lines and how well, and because I've been trying to talk to people all over, and sometimes I can't even call them. I'm like, what's just going on? So I have to just wait and see what happens. But it was lovely, Mark, and it was just, it was just really lovely. So thank you very, very, very
okay,
much.
Okay, thanks. And I'll drop you an email. We'll schedule for another evening. It's been my pleasure getting a chance to talk to you, Miriam.
Okay, you take care. Have a wonderful evening. All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye.